Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Now this story of President Eisenhower, Close Encounters, is this the Valiant Thor story?
Oh my goodness, no.
Okay.
I don't have a whole lot of faith in that one, I'm sorry to say. This is the story of him going out to Palm Springs, California on a so-called golf vacation in February of 1954. Eisenhower could have golfed anywhere. So the very fact that he flew like over 2,000 miles just to spend 4 or 5 days golfing in the desert should have raised some red flags right off the bat.
And that's 2 years after the UFO flap over the nation's capital, right?
That's right. Okay. Which you ever see headlines in a Washington paper, there's a picture of Eisenhower just after winning the Republican Party nomination with Richard Nixon as his running mate, and then the headline right above them is UFOs over the Capitol and, on a couple of occasions, July 1952.
That's right. Okay, so tell us about his trip.
Well, Eisenhower and the First Lady went out to Palm Springs despite the fact that they practically made a second home out of Augusta, Georgia, where they loved the golf course there, and people literally built him a house on the course to live in. So it becomes exceptionally strange to fly all the way out to Palm Springs, which was just a short flight to Edwards Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. The Western White House, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, he stayed at the Palm Springs Smoke Tree Ranch, and a bit of an exclusive place. And on Friday night, February 19th, 1954, we can check the records, and he seemed to have a big gap during the evening where his whereabouts are not officially recorded. And meanwhile, there was a big party for the media at the hotel, which they probably didn't think much of at the time. But this may be the MO, method of operation of distracting the media to give the president a really good chance to slip out under the cover of darkness and fly to Edwards Air Force Base. In the early 1980s, a man stepped forward and said, "I was amongst this group that encircled President Eisenhower to give him extra security. At Edwards, as we stood on the edge of a runway in an open air plane hangar, and there were five spaceships out on the hangar, or out on the runway rather, and some human-like aliens stepped out and communicated in English with President Eisenhower, and they had some things they wanted to share with him, and then they kind of overplayed their hand, and he told them to beat it," in so many words.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said...
Pretty gutsy by the president.
Well, in so many words, he said, "We can't have this. This is just, you know, unacceptable to people. You're too far beyond us." They had ships that dazzled everyone. They put on an aerial display over the runway in the desert night air, and showed that their technology was far ahead of ours. Three were circular ships, and two were elongated or cigar-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And they landed and came back, and then they really blew the president's mind, and that was the last straw with what they were able to do right in front of him.
What was that?
And that was to be able to either cloak themselves or control their molecular structure, their atomic structure, and make themselves invisible to the naked eye.
Wow.
And reappear, even moving over to one side. The pilot says, "I was there," and Eisenhower was really uncomfortable about this. We knew they were there, and yet I guess they heard them, and then they couldn't see them. So they reappeared, and Eisenhower was like, "Oh my goodness, we just cannot have this walking around on the in our country. It would cause absolute chaos, disrupt our society, and you know, I'm not going to be responsible for a Wall Street crash and people having heart attacks." And everyone remembered the War of the Worlds, the Orson Welles broadcast, where supposedly people panicked at the thought of Martians.
Well, they did indeed.
You know. That was a little overblown by Orson Welles in the aftermath, claiming all this. There was a bit of a curious reaction by people. I think one man did have a heart attack, but everyone recalled that and thought, "Oh boy, we can't have aliens landing here in our skies, zipping about in our air traffic, and walking around amongst people, even if they did look like humans very much. That was the description by the pilot, who wished to remain anonymous and told this story. And it came out in newspapers in 1982 and little dribs and drabs. And I read about it in 1985 and thought, this is a really cool story.
Do you believe this story, Paul?
I really do. After researching it for many years and cramming as many facts and sources into my book to try to give people their money's worth, I really think it did happen. And there's a number of sources in there that say it's a very real thing. Eisenhower was calm, but told him, you're going to have to leave. Apparently, the main thing the aliens wanted in exchange for a, quote, educational program for humanity to let them know that they're not alone in the universe was to please stop these atomic bomb test detonations going on in the air, in the water, on the land. It's polluting all three and punching into outer space. And they practically begged President Eisenhower, and he eventually declined, and he said, I'm not going to disarm unilaterally, and he kept up the test atomic bomb explosion project for a couple of years to come.
Couldn't these ETs have obliterated us if they wanted to?
I would assume so. Yeah, they certainly had the aerial technology and the cloaking technology, and we can assume that if they were of the violent nature, but they were said to have been friendly, spoke English, were unarmed, and they were not any threat in person to Eisenhower. But this is another threat. As an old war maneuvering strategist, Eisenhower was quite familiar with the story of the Trojan horse. What if you let in some friendly aliens? And this is just opening the floodgates to gosh knows what coming later. So this is another reason why he asked them to stay away and may have formed an agreement of sorts that needed to be signed. And the late, great Art Campbell put together some wonderful research that indicated Eisenhower flew to New Mexico in February of 1955, 1 year later, and may well have cinched up an agreement addressing this issue of the aliens having a base out in Nevada that, with the Air Force permission to come and go quietly, and in exchange would not show themselves, would not disrupt American society, and people would be allowed to blithely go on believing that UFOs and little green men were just silly science fiction movies at the time.
That's possibly very conceivable. Do you think there was a private deal, not public, but a private deal cut with the ETs then?
I believe so. However, how enforceable would this be if they were of such superior nature and such a treaty was never ratified by Congress, so therefore not really legal, not too enforceable because they had the power over us. As I was just watching a video with Don Phillips, an employee of Skunk Works, and he
said
he had access to this file, and he saw that Eisenhower did meet with aliens, and he said Eisenhower is quoted as saying, well, how can we stop you? You are so superior to us. And that was the crux of the problem, but I think the agreement held, and we're doing just fine to this day, probably still with that in place.
Paul, I remember years ago, I was in a supermarket in Detroit and saw a National Enquirer cover of Eisenhower and aliens. And it was a sketch, but they had the aliens looking like grays with Eisenhower.
That's understandable. We didn't know too much about the story then. I contacted Dari Matera, who wrote that story for the National Enquirer. I asked first, do you have any new information, anything to update? And he said no, but he still stuck with the story as written back in 1982, October of 82 in the Enquirer.
Wow.
And so he got a lot of information, partly from Dr. Alan J. Hynek, mentioned in the article. And he also talked to Lord Clancarty, who was leading a UFO investigation in the House of Lords in England and was making a name for himself. And that's who the test pilot stepped forward to talk to at some length on the condition of not giving out his real name. And to this day, we don't know his real name.
Well, I'm curious too, Paul, because we had Cape Girardeau in 41, Roswell in 47, this meeting in 54 with ETs that looked like humans.
Right.
But the other ones were grays. So are we dealing with different species who have been coming to this planet since the beginning of time?
It's a very good question, and I would refer us back to Phil Corso, who said he felt, the Army felt, inside Access, that those in charge felt that the gray beings are bio-robots, and they were created by the human-type race, or maybe another race, to do like the dirty work of going around collecting samples, testing the air, doing a surveillance flight over some continent, checking the flora and the fauna and the human race, and then reporting back to the mothership that they were almost like little slaves or hunting dogs, as it says in one report.
Traveling great distances when the ETs didn't want to.
That's right. Send them out to do the dirty work, and you come back and report, and we'll take the credit.
Well, like our little Mars rovers are doing right now.
Very much so, yes, sir.
Interesting take. There's a story that you talk about the legendary sudden dental emergency. What is that?
Well, that is one thing that will probably surprise some UFO buffs, that they've latched on to this story that President Eisenhower left the Smoke Tree Ranch on Saturday night, the 20th, supposedly with a health emergency. And he kind of did. It turns out he was chewing on a leg of duck that had been shot that morning by the host of the dinner at the ranch. And she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. President. There's buckshot in the meat. The
boys
to bring down the bird." And he bit into it, and he cut up his upper left incisor. And so he had to get genuine dental emergency treatment. And what I'm told is the host of the dinner ran to the phone and called up his dentist, and the dentist didn't believe the story. He said, "Yeah, right, the president." And he went back to sleep. And this is what took half the night, that Eisenhower was driven to the dentist's office and sat outside fuming because the dentist didn't show up. And they had to call him back later and say, "Where are you? The president's waiting." And he finally hurried over there and worked on him. And that's why the president was out so darn late. The night after the actual ET incident. I had to really bring him down to earth.
You can't make that up.
Yeah. And so even to this day, the Dwight Eisenhower Presidential Library, if you call them up, they just laugh about, "Oh, yeah, he was with aliens." No, we've got records saying that night he was with the dentist and had his tooth treated by Dr. Francis Purcell. And they're right. That story is correct. It was the night before that Eisenhower went on his little jaunt to Edwards Air Force Base, and when it was over, he swore everyone to secrecy there, too. And again, you didn't go against your commander-in-chief, and it was a very obedient era where you didn't question the government, and only one witness came forward in the early 80s because all the other eyewitnesses to the encounter had died, and he didn't want the story to die out itself, so he felt like speaking up at last.
We're going to take calls with Paul Blake Smith next hour. And also, if you're from Cape Girardeau and you know that story of that 41 crash, definitely check in with us. What about previous presidents? What do they know, or did they know?
I think Harry Truman knew a great deal. He was a senator who had spent the summer of 1906 training in that National Guard Armory in Cape Girardeau. He knew Cape. He was friends with Garland Fronabarger, the photographer, newsman I mentioned. He was in Washington, D.C., holding some military funding hearings at the time of the 41 crash. And he was the Grand Master Mason, the Freemason of Missouri at the time. And we'll say, "Well, what's that got to do anything?" Grand Master Masons stick together pretty good. Freemasons do. They keep secrets. They have secret codes, secret handshakes, and they're good people. They do good things, but they revere the U.S. Capitol building. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Where would you store in 1941 this material right away where it would be safe and guarded? And it would be like a national treasure. You didn't know what was going to come next. Are aliens going to come back and, you know, fight it out? So they buried it deep below for a few months, I feel, and then they decided, "We've got to start back engineering and examining this material." So, like you said, they probably took it to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio.
What a great story.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.